हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम ओम सदा शिव समारंभां व्यास शंकर मध्यमां अस्मदाचार्य पर्यन्तां वंदे गुरु परंपरां श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादम् शंकरम् लोकशंकरम् शंकरम् शंकराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ओम वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वंदे जगद्गुरुं ओम सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति शांति शांति
द ह्यूमन लाइफ बिकम्स अ मीनिंगफुल लाइफ ओनली व्हेन द लाइफ इज लिव्ड with understanding of the purpose of living this life. Without knowing the purpose of living this life, when we live this life, life doesn't become a meaningful life. Still life is lived. It doesn't become a meaningful life. So it's very important for one to discern what is one seeking on one's life, what is really sought after in one's life, what is it a man is seeking through all that he wants to possess, own, enjoy in life. That is what we saw in previous classes. The analysis of what one wants in life, wants to achieve, accomplish in life, will help one to understand definitely what a human being wants is. Through all that he seeks is everlasting peace and happiness. So the happiness that is sought is definitely something which he does not want to lose. Once you attain happiness, will you like to lose it? Who would be interested in losing happiness? Therefore, it's very clear. I want to be happy. And once I become happy, I don't want to lose that happiness. Means I want to have it forever. Which means that happiness is something which he wants, that happiness to be permanently there. If something what he wants to have permanently, forever, not losing it, then it must not have beginning. Why? Because what does the logic say? What does generally anything which is gained is subject to get lost. Anything which is attained will definitely will go away. anything obtained will anything just which comes in association will definitely dissociate itself. Nothing gained will be there permanently. Something very important I'm telling today. Anything gained newly is of the nature of subject to go away, is of the nature of going away, subject to change, which means you have to think well here. This happiness which we are seeking, we analyzed our purusharthas earlier. We understood what is artha. We understood what is that, what is, you know, the security. What is pleasure, kamaha. What is the dharma also, we understood a little bit. So by analyzing all of them, we understood the mokshaha, the freedom from unhappiness, the unwanted, undesirable, is that it implies the happiness. And that happiness is something which is wanted means. And do if we have to attain that happiness, gain that happiness. And we should also remember this law that anything gained, newly gained, is subject to go away, subject to get lost, which means. And why should we work so hard for that happiness, you know, which you're going to gain newly and definitely which will go away. In fact, when you do not have happiness, that's one thing. Having gained, attained happiness and losing that happiness is again, is worse. It's more painful. Therefore, if we think, then are we really interested in such happiness? And this is where our scriptures tell you, happiness that you are seeking, you know, is a permanent happiness. If it is permanent happiness, it is not something to be gained. No, it should not go means it must be already there. That is why you can use the adjective eternal only if the happiness is already there. That is why you are seeking happiness is a fact. Happiness is a choiceless end is a fact. And that happiness is not something to be attained is a fact. It is something to be discovered is a fact. And that discovery of that happiness is only in the form of discovery of the reality of the universe is a fact. And that reality of the universe can be discovered only as the self. Only as very I in one's own mind is a fact. Therefore, discovering one's own self is the discovery of the truth of the universe. And discovering the truth of the universe is the discovery of happiness, and which is permanent, eternal. Which has no beginning, which has no end, which is not subject to change. That is why we say mokshaha is a choiceless common human end, a choiceless end. When you understand this end being choiceless, then you become committed to the pursuit of that end, then your life becomes a meaningfully lived life. Then the commitment to the pursuit of that end called moksha is actually the commitment to the pursuit of end called knowledge of the reality. Thereby, it becomes commitment to the pursuit of the knowledge of the very self. Therefore, self-knowledge becomes the ultimate end of human life. And for the self-knowledge, you are sure you need a means of knowledge. And that means of knowledge is the scripture. And only in that context you understand the value of the study of the Veda Anta Shastram. So why do we study Veda Anta Shastram? Because Veda Anta Shastram serves as a means of knowledge. And because you know the value of the study of the Vedanta Shastram, the Vedanta, then you become committed to the study. You understand the connection. What is the connection between the study of the Vedanta Shastram and my ultimate end? It's called, Sadhana Sadhya Sambandha. Pratipadaka Pratipadya Sambandha. There's a connection. What is revealed is Pratipadyam. What is revealed is the nature of the reality as the nature of one's own self. What is the nature of the reality? Happiness is nothing but fullness, which is the nature of the self and which is the nature of the reality. When I use the word nature, what do I mean? I want you to understand. When you say H2O is the nature of the ocean, you cannot separate H2O and ocean. You cannot separate H2O and water. When I say heat is the nature of the intrinsic nature of the fire, you cannot separate heat and fire. When you say light is the intrinsic nature of the sun, you cannot separate. Similarly, fullness or happiness is the nature of the reality, nature of the truth of every being here. Therefore, nature of the truth, nature of the one's, nature of one's own self is happiness. When you say, you can understand happiness and self, which is I. Every time when we say I, that I, the self, Atma, and the happiness are inseparable. Therefore, discovering the self is discovering happiness. And that is what Pratipadyam, that revealed. Pratipadyam is what is revealed here? The nature of the self being fullness is revealed. And what is it which reveals the nature of the self being happiness? The Shastram, Vedanta. Vedanta Shastram Pratipadayati. Pratipadakam. Revealer of the fact. Revealer is the Vedanta Shastram. What is revealed? This nature of the self being happiness. What is the end? Discovery of happiness. How do you discover? When it is revealed, you take ownership. You do not attain happiness. You take ownership of happiness as yourself, for which it needs to be brought to light. And Shastram throws light. This is where we understand the importance and the value of the study of the Vedanta. Therefore, once you know the value of the study, then you become committed to the study. Then commitment to study becomes meaningful. Then interest also, nobody needs to create interest in you, isn't it? When do you become interested? The interest is, you see, that becomes so important, the commitment. Then we also saw this knowing the value of the study of the Shastram. Then you study a scripture not by yourself. You don't read the translations and try to understand. That will not work. You have to study it with the help of the teacher who knows this methodology, the sampradaya. If you know the value of the Shastram, the teacher, thereafter we saw last class. And what is that? Even if the Shastram is available, the pramana, I use the term pramanam. I'm going to explain to you again today. So, the means of knowledge is the Shastram. The end is very clear. The means of knowledge is available. And that even if the teacher is available, it is knowledge requires qualification. I told you, any knowledge requires qualification. One has to be qualified in order to be qualified further. So this self-knowledge also requires prerequisite qualification. And whatever is the qualification required, you will make all possible effort to see that you get qualified once you know the value of this knowledge and once you become committed to the pursuit of knowledge. See, commitment is so important. Commitment is possible only if there's conviction. Yes, this is what I seek and this is how it is. I need to discover that means the end is choiceless. What choice do we have? What choice do we have? Tell me. Is any choice about no discovering happiness? No, I don't care. Let me not work for it. We will never say that. It's a choiceless end means you become committed to the end. You know the value of it, you become committed. The conviction is there that the end is choiceless. Conviction is there. How did you have the conviction? How did you get convinced? Not simply so I'm saying, somebody else saying. You've been listening and you analyzed your ends. You analyzed artha, you analyzed kama, you analyzed dharma. Little bit, not elaborately. But anyway, it is very clear through all that I want in life, what I want is definitely happiness. There's no doubt. And it is a common human goal. One, that conviction is there. Conviction is born of your own understanding, your own, which doesn't contradict your reasoning. You are not forced to accept. Yes, moksha is your end. Accept it. Otherwise, nobody can force you here. You are forced on you, not imposed on you. It doesn't contradict your reasoning. You think, you understand, and you accept. Then you become committed. And that context, conviction is there, conviction born of understanding, which is backed by your commitment to the pursuit of knowledge. And with such commitment, conviction and understanding, knowing the value of Shastram and knowing the value of knowledge, knowing the value of the teaching being offered, and you understand all these are available, so what if you are not qualified? Still you can't enjoy what is available. Therefore, you will make all possible efforts to make yourself qualified. Now, how to become qualified? In fact, the same Shastram says, you forget about the end. Forget about everything. Don't need to worry about anything. Just understand the way of life. Live this way of life effortlessly, comfortably. You will become qualified for knowledge. And that way of life is what? Living a life of karma yoga. You understand the context, this is where you understand the living a life of karma yoga is a way of life. So sanatanaha dharmaha. When you know the importance of the value of the way of life and all that you need is understand what is this way of life and live that way of life. Follow that way of life. So we saw last class that how one can live a life of karma yoga. I said karma means action. And here karma means the whole life is governed by actions. From morning once you get up until you fall asleep, what we do is karma, actions only. There are involuntary action functions, the voluntary actions. Involuntary functions are always there, of course. Voluntary actions are there. And all of us have to do different, we have to play different roles. Every individual has to play different roles, not one role. And playing every role, you have certain duties and commitments, responsibilities. So in fulfilling all those duties and responsibilities, whatever you need to do, and see that all the actions you do are in conformity with universal values. This is called dharma acharanam, dharma anushtanam, means living a life of dharma, means seeing one has to take care of that all one's actions are governed by one's knowledge of right and wrong. Fortunately, we are blessed with the knowledge of right and wrong. We are blessed with the knowledge of values. The other person need not come and tell you, come on, these are all the values. Speaking the truth is a value. Not telling lies is a value. Not cheating, not betraying is a value. Not hurting other person is a value. You know, these are all values. You have to follow. Speak the truth. Don't tell lies. If somebody comes and tells you, you will feel bored. You already know. Do you need to be taught what values are? Not at all. You will be bored. You already know this. Even child will tell, come, I know I should speak the truth. Who doesn't know? We all know values. Please remember, we need not be taught values. That is why other person comes and tells you, follow values. You know, you feel so bored. People, especially youngsters nowadays, feel very burdened when they're, you know, told, please follow values. Because they already know values. What we do not know is the value of values. That is when we do not follow values. If you ask me, we know the values, but still we do not follow values. Not that always we are transgressing values. Occasionally, once in a while, in given situations, we are not very strict. We are little, we compromise with values sometimes. We don't really take it very seriously about it. Why? In Mahabharatam, there's a place, Duryodhana says very clearly, Janami dharmam, I know dharma values very well. Nachame pravrittihi, but I cannot follow values. I'm not able to follow values. Janami adharmam, I know adharma, I know what is wrong very well. What is not right, what is wrong, I know very well. But nachame nivrittihi, but it's difficult for me to refrain from doing wrong things. Very difficult. This is a problem. This Duryodhana represents, you know, most of us. Not that we don't want to. We don't intend to do wrong things. But still we do wrong things. Not because we do not know what is right and what is wrong. We know what is right. We know what is wrong, definitely. That is why people, you know, in spite of knowing what is right and wrong, we're naturally blessed with the knowledge of right and wrong. We're naturally blessed with the will to do the right, to do a given action, not to do the given action. In spite of that, we do wrong actions. Why? Because we do not know the value of values, the importance of following values, the important necessity of living a life of values. And only when the end becomes very clear, that is why I am saying here, only is called Purushartha Nischayaha. It is the knowledge of ultimate end being everlasting happiness. Only when you become very clear, this is what my ultimate choiceless end is. End is very clear. And that moksha is in the form of the knowledge of the truth as the self, one's own self. In the context of the value of knowledge alone, you understand the importance of the qualification required for the knowledge. How can you become qualified? The mental purity, mental steadiness are the qualifications required for this knowledge. And mental purity is possible only if you live a life of karma yoga means. And karma yoga means what? To convert any action you do into yoga. First thing you need is what? Your actions must be in conformity with dharma. I made it very clear last class. There may be people like Bernard Shaw who are humanists, who simply, without having the moksha as an end also, as a human being, they're very humane. Then naturally, one can simply live a life of dharma. Such a person also becomes ethical person. But here, with the Purushartha Nischaya, with the end being very clear, and for that end, for that jnanam, for the knowledge, for the qualification, I need to be emotionally prepared for that knowledge. For the qualification, I choicelessly I have to live a life of dharma, knowing the value of values. When you make all possible efforts to live a life of dharma as a spiritual person, you are ethical also. And that is what Krishna says, yogaha karmasu kaushalam in Bhagavad Gita. There's a definition of yoga. E karmasu kaushalam yogaha. Discretion in action is yogaha. The word kaushalam, if you take, many meanings are given. Kaushalam, kushalaha means a clever person. Kushalaha is an adjective. Kaushalam is a noun. Kushalaha means, any clever person, shrewd person, intelligent person is a kushalaha. Kaushalam means what now? Actually, the clever person, sharp. Which means the person, because of his intellectual sharpness, he can perform an action very efficiently. He can perform the action, perfectly. So very skillfully, he can express his skill in his action. There are many people translate skill in what one does is the yoga. Or efficiency in one's actions is yoga. Or perfection in action is yoga. These are all the translations you'd have read. But I tell you, we have to understand how perfectly you do your action. How efficiently do you do your action? How skillfully you do your action doesn't matter if you are not conscious of dharma. Your actions are not in conformity with the values. I tell you, the efficiency does not make your action yoga. Convert it into yoga. Your perfection, your proficiency, efficiency, perfection, your skill, nothing converts your action to yoga if that action is against the values. Alpuji Swamiji says, if just mere skill, mere perfection, mere efficiency in action is yoga, means every pickpocketer, any dacoit, every robber will become a yogi. Therefore, you'd be very careful. Please understand, it is not mere perfection and efficiency. Of course, it's always we had to be perfect. We had to try our best to be perfect and efficient and skillful in our actions. But still, it must be governed by our knowledge of right and wrong, irrespective of what will be the outcome of the action. Therefore, dharma. Okay, this is the discretion in action is yoga. And then when you perform the actions also, I told last class, you do it with proper attitude. Once the end is very clear, you are not attached to the fruits of actions. You are performing action for the fruit of action alone. You are performing the action expecting the result alone. The very action itself is impelled by your desire and your needs. How can you perform an action without expecting the result? And the Shastra does not say do the karma without expecting the result. The very performance, the purpose of performance of an action is for the benefit only, for the result only. So it's impossible for one to perform any action without expecting a result. Therefore, there's a sentence, you know, mandaha api na pravartate prayojanam anuddishya. Even a fool does not, you know, begin to do something without expecting a result, without expecting some, without having some purpose. So nobody can do any action without expecting a result. So we have to understand very we are doing the karma for expecting the result alone. But we should be very careful. We are not performing the karma merely for the result. We are performing the karma, expecting the result to live this life, and we are living this life ultimately for discovering moksha. I'm doing the karma not for accomplishing, not for happiness, not for thing, isn't it? I'm doing this karma for the result, to live the life. I'm living this life for moksha, for jnanam. That is very clear. Then your actions, you are not attached to the fruits of actions. Which means you are not dependent on the fruits of actions for your happiness. Why? You are very clear. Happiness is not in the fruit of an action. What I am seeking, that happiness, the limitless happiness, everlasting happiness, eternal happiness, isn't it? That happiness is not anywhere. It is myself. It is a true nature of the true reality. Therefore, it's something to be discovered. It is not in the fruit of the action. Therefore, no fruit of action, no result of action can bring me what? No. Happiness that I am seeking. If this is what, we will be very careful. I want the result. I expect the result. I have to live the life. I do the karma, but my happiness is not here. I've understood that happiness is something to be discovered, not to be attained by doing an action. If this is very clear, this is a fact, very subtle fact, you have to remember. Remembering this fact, now when you do this karma, no, then you will not be dependent on the fruit of action for happiness. Then you are not attached to the fruit of action. You are expecting the fruit of action. You want the fruit of action, but still you are not attached to the fruit of action because you are not dependent on the fruit of action for happiness. Why? Because you know the fruit of action will not be happiness. Is it clear? This is what is not being attached to the fruit of action. then the attitude, therefore all the actions you do become offered to Bhagavan, because you, the attitude is what? Ishvara, I do all these actions, the Ishvara Arpana Buddhihi. Then the situations, whatever comes also, all the situations which come as a result of actions or not a result of actions, whatever situation comes in life, everything comes, whatever happens in one's life, in your life or my life, my friend's life or other's life, whatever happens, whatever exists here, exists within the realm of law and order. Nothing is happening just like that. Everything happens, everything exists within the realm of law and order. It's a very important fact. We need to understand, we need to remember this. If everything happens, whatever happens is within the realm of law and order, means everything is appropriate. It may look inappropriate for me, but everything is appropriate here. That means whatever comes, the situation may be desirable, may be undesirable. The life, again, how I doing karma is a is something. No choice about doing karma. Even though I have choice over karma, I can choose to do the right, avoid the wrong, expect the results, want the results, but I should be very conscious and I should remember, be intelligent enough to remember this fact. Happiness cannot be the result of action. Therefore, if I am not dependent on karma phalam, the fruit of action for my happiness, it's all fine. Similarly, the situations they come also are nothing but pairs of opposites. Either desirable or undesirable. What is the success or failure, loss or gain, victory or defeat? When they come, how to see them? But we can't remain the same. It is very natural for me to get elated when pleasure comes. It is very natural for me to feel dejected and depressed and low when something undesirable happens. This is how generally ordinary human beings are, all of us are generally. But Shastram says, and now you change. How to change? Learn to remain the same in all situations. You know, samatvam yoga uchyate. How to remain the same on all situations is what we stopped last class. I just wanted to repeat because, you know, I was reminded that I said very little about this prasada buddhi. So I wanted to re-emphasize today. Even if it is a repetition, I don't mind. I'm very happy because it's good for all of you to know this. Because this, whatever comes in life, you know, in all situations, remain balanced. Means, be equanimous. Entertain the sameness of mind towards all situations in life means. How is it possible? It is possible only if you understand the fact about the situations. What is the fact here? All these situations are impermanent. Nothing, no situation is permanent. If pain is impermanent, you are very happy. Abba, pain is impermanent, it's going to go. But please remember, pleasure also impermanent. Now, all the pairs of opposite, everything is impermanent. Why? Because that is the nature of any situation. There's the nature of everything here. Pain, pleasure, loss, gain, success, failure, honor, dishonor, victory, defeat, all these are impermanent. Nothing is permanent. Therefore what? They will come and go. If you understand this fact, what say do we have over the situations? I cannot push the pain when it comes to go soon. I cannot hold on, retain the pleasure when it comes. It will go. I have no say. We have to understand this. We do not have say over pains and pleasures, the paths of opposites which come and go. Why? Because why we do not have say? Because they are not our choice. We do not have choice over fruits of actions. They are determined by the natural laws. Where is the natural law? Which is the natural law? If you ask, I tell you, there are innumerably countless natural laws which exist as part and parcel of the universe. You cannot see the natural laws through physical eyes, but you can understand these natural laws being manifest. It is these natural laws which govern the fruits of actions, which determine the fruits of actions. Appropriate result for the appropriate action. You may be doing right actions now, but there are wrong actions which might have been done by you earlier, the results of which now come the undesirable pain. You might have done right actions before, the results of which now come as the desirable situations, pleasure, etc. Therefore, there's a connection. Whatever comes is determined by the natural laws in keeping with your own past actions, and which you cannot understand. This is another fact. And this is where we say, at present karma you have say. That is why use your knowledge of right and wrong. Use your knowledge of, use your willpower and choose to do the right, avoid the wrong. At present you have choice over actions. Karmani evate adhikaraha. You have choice over actions. You can choose to do a given action, you can choose to avoid the other action. You could choose to come to the class. You didn't choose to go for today's Olympics evening. You had choice. No, choice over actions. But once you finish doing it, the fruits of actions, you have no choice over. That is what is said here. Therefore, you have no. Please understand, you can choose to do the action, you can choose to refrain from wrong action, if you use your knowledge of values, knowledge of right and wrong, if you remember the value of values, if you use your knowledge of right and wrong, if you use your willpower, you can choose to do the right, you can avoid the wrong. But your choice over actions, but you do not have choice over the results of actions. You can expect the results, but be ready to accept whatever will be the result. Therefore, it is not said one should do one's actions without expecting a result. No. You expect the results, no problem. But when you expect the results, learn to accept them. Whatever result comes, even if you do not want the result, you have no choice. Result is definite. That is law of karma. Every action, whether you expect the result, you don't expect the result, a result is definitely there. But whether results will be to your expectation or not to your expectation is not in your hands. They're determined by the natural laws. And the laws determine the results in conformity with your own past actions. The present situation, present actions are only instrumental for the past results to surface, to manifest. Therefore, once you understand these natural laws are also manifestations of the same Lord, then this is where you relate. You see these laws as the Lord. You don't see one Lord coming and sitting somewhere else. You see the Lord being manifest, as the natural laws which govern which determine these fruits of actions. Once you see it as laws, you see these laws as the Lord, then any result is Lord, law ordained. It becomes what? Lord ordained. Then you can accept it as prasadaha, gift from Bhagavan. Understand? That's called entertaining the attitude of accepting everything which comes in life as prasadaha, as a gift. When gift is given to you, you will not say no to any gift. A person brings the gift with a nicely wrapped, beautiful paper outside. Inside a small plastic rose. Bought in pound shop. Another person brings nice, very expensive, small tiny box he brings. But inside, solitaire ring. Small tiny box. But the ring inside is a solitaire diamond. Very expensive. Big box. A bunch of plastic roses. Pound shop. But both are wrapped well. Will you say, when the gift is given to you, big box, you accept it with sameness of mind. Same smile. Even though inside you value this more. This is given, you accept it with sameness of mind. You know? That's what gift means. You don't discriminate. You accept it with sameness of mind. Gift. So, pain and pleasure, loss and gain, success and failure, defeat and victory, all, honor and dishonor, whatever comes is a gift from Bhagavan. Gift from the Lord in the form of loss. Then, you accept it with sameness of mind, not mechanically, not frustrating, not with the frustration, not because you have no choice here, but when you accept them with understanding. See, accepting situations, we all accept situations helplessly, choicelessly. Then we feel so frustrated and depressed that way. We accept it. What choice do we have? But you get really miserable. But here, there's no misery. When you accept them with sameness of mind, with understanding, you are so relaxed. Because nothing gets stagnant in your life, you're progressing. Failures always makes the person stagnant. It affects the progress. But here, the karma yogi is always progressive because nothing makes him stagnant. Because he's always relaxed. This is real relaxation. When doing karma, proper attitude, offering with an attitude of offering everything to the Lord. When whatever comes in life, see, you look at it as gift from Bhagavan. Therefore, you accept them with sameness of mind. This entertaining sameness of mind is so important, which converts one's life into a life of karma yoga. Now, it is this lifestyle, commitment to dharma, Ishwararpana buddhi, Ishwar prasada buddhi, and the equanimity, the entertaining it, remaining the same in all situations, without ups and downs, with elation and depression, that converts one's life into life of karma yoga. It is this way of life, really, in due course of time, will bless one with adequate, appropriate qualification required for knowledge. We have to remember here, living a life of karma yoga itself will not bless you with the end. Itself, living a karma yoga is incomplete without knowledge. But knowledge, accomplishment of knowledge will be impossible without living a life of karma yoga. Is it clear? why I'm emphasizing so much today, because we all have a very strong understanding. Meditation is the only way. What do you want to know the truth for? Not very clear. What do you want to study philosophy for? You know, I have good company, decent people I can part of, I can associate myself with. It's again sort of a pleasure for me. Again, it's intellectual exercise, pleasure. Because there is this again, sometimes in studying philosophy becomes a pursuit of security. Why do you want to study philosophy? Because I can be part of something. I'm part of some institution. Because being part of something, I feel secure. I have many friends. Again, becomes to see, there is no moksha purushartha. The end is not very clear. Again, it's a pleasure. Therefore, again, what comes? Then why do we study scriptures? Not necessary. Why study? Break your head. Why study? What is the study for? Do your action without expecting a result. Karma yoga. Do any service without expecting a money. That is karma yoga. No. Whether you are paid or not paid, it is service. Whatever you do is a service. If you have punyam, you are paid. If you don't have punyam, you are not paid. Whether you are paid or not, does that unpaid action does not become yoga. There must be purushartha nischaya. There must be end must be very clear. Knowledge being the ultimate end must be very clear. There is commitment to the pursuit of knowledge. And you should remember that you need Shastram and the teacher for the knowledge. And even if the teacher and Shastram are available, I must be qualified for knowledge. That must be very clear. And for qualification, no shortcut method can help. I had to live a life of dharma consciously. I should live my life consciously with all alertness. You know, for which I need to live. I need to have proper attitude in doing my actions, and I should understand this fact. Whatever comes exists within the realm of law and order. Nothing comes just like that. Unless I understand this fact, it is not possible for me to remain the same in all situations, to remain balanced. Prasada buddhi is very important. Therefore, these things, you know, once I live a life karma yoga, only I can become qualified. Mental purity. Otherwise, I tell you, it is impossible for one to manage one's thoughts. Now, mental purity is dependent on your thought management. Thought management is what? Mind management. See, absolute mental purity is possible only in the wake of knowledge of the self being happiness. Until that knowledge takes place, one has to be relatively pure. That relative purity is possible only if you manage your thoughts. And thoughts, because you have to understand the fact here, you are not creating your thoughts. You are not creating your jealousy. You are not creating your anger. You are not creating your desire. Mental purity means what? No, having the mind without jealousy, hatred, anger, desire, all of them. Is it practical? How can you expect the ocean without waves? How can you expect the mind without these thoughts, emotions? Very natural. And those thoughts will be there. And there will be thousands. We are living in a world where all the situations, all the associations, interactions will trigger all the thoughts. You are not creating them. They're already in subconscious. They just surface. Only they will wait for the thought to be triggered. Something has to trigger, it will surface. You are so helpless. We have to understand our helplessness. We are not creating these thoughts. They're naturally there. You cannot undo the thoughts, destroy the thoughts. You cannot fight against the thoughts. You cannot suppress the thoughts or oppress the thoughts. You have all that you can do is you can manage the thoughts. That is why we never even, our Swamiji does not even like using the word control, mind control. People do use this word control. Of course, I won't say it is wrong, but it is not that correct. Control means what? You should have say over something for you to be able to control, isn't it? How can you control? Controlling means you should have some say over it. Then you can control. It's not a dog, isn't it? Even the dog will not listen sometimes. Which means controlling is possible, you know, when we say over it. What say do you have over your own thoughts? Your anger. Are you creating it? We have to. Therefore, thoughts are part of me, the individual. My own individuality. Like how your hair and nail are part of you. Your skin is part of you. Your bone is part of you. The thoughts are part of you, the individual. Therefore, you cannot undo the thoughts. They have to be managed. And this management of those emotions, anger, desire, etc., is thought management, mind management, otherwise called self-management. We call it mastery. Relative, you have to have relative mastery. And for which, what is the way? How can I manage my thoughts? Live a life of karma yoga. It is the purusharta nischaya and commitment to dharma which converts your action into yoga, whether it is paid or not paid. What is karma yoga has to be understood very clearly. And only if you live a life of karma yoga, then even if you practice meditation also, meditation is a manasam karma, mental activity. Even meditation becomes yoga. Whether a physical activity or oral activity or mental activity, any action, mental, physical or oral, all the actions contribute for mental purity and mental steadiness. In terms of qualification required for knowledge, which will result in absolute accomplishment of the end, only if you live a life of dharma. Only if you live a life of karma yoga. Mere practice of meditation is like simply doing any other physical exercise. It can help you to calm your mind little bit. But once you come out of meditation, the calmness will be disturbed. You will have the same old problems. Mere practice of meditation, vitar purusharth nischaya, what am I living this life for? What is knowledge for? How to attain the knowledge? What is the means of knowledge? How to study the shastram? What is the qualification required for knowledge? How can I become qualified for knowledge? What should I do to become qualified? What is living a life karma yoga? How to live life karma yoga? Without this understanding, if I simply practice meditation, mantra meditation or any other meditation. I'm not saying meditation, without knowing this, if you practice meditation, it is totally useless. I'm not saying. It will not serve the purpose. It will not serve the purpose. because we will see meditation here. We'll also see meditation here in our own sessions. And I told you, as the person who wants to live a life of karma yoga has to fill his life with Ishvara Bhagavan. How can you fill your life with Ishvara? How can you bring Ishvara in your life? Only by being prayerful and worshipful. I explained last class, now how you can be prayerful, how important it is for one to be prayerful. Because if you are not prayerful, there's no way of tapping the Lord's grace. Without grace, it is impossible for you to be strong enough to be able to live a life of dharma. You are blessed with the knowledge of right and wrong. You are blessed with the willpower. But still, to use your will, not to abuse the will, to be conscious of the knowledge of dharma, like how Duryodhana says, we can't afford to say. To be righteous, to be ethical, to live a life of dharma, no, then you need grace, for which you had to be prayerful. You seek grace, you need, because we are living in a situation, society, where you are mixing with the people, where you may be cornered to go against your own will. And you can't say, no, I want to live a life of values, but I'm living in society. People, I can't survive otherwise in this country, in this world, if I really follow values. I can't survive. I had to compromise, because I had to, be a Roman when you're in Rome. So I had to go with others' interests. All these things, problems will come. That is why you need tremendous strength, for which I tell you a very important for one to be prayerful. And as I told you last class, prayer is a will involved auto-suggestion. It is 100% efficacious when prayerful. And not only are prayerful, you think of all that you are blessed with. And once you think of all that you are blessed with, you will be so humble and simple, and you will really express your gratitude to Bhagavan. You know, is expression of one's gratitude to the Lord for all that you are already blessed with is what now is being worshipful. Therefore, this worshipfulness and prayerfulness is very important in Karma Yogi's life. Apart from the proper attitudes he entertains, apart from the commitment to live life of dharma, what really, really charges him with adequate energy and strength to live that way of life he is committed to live is his prayer and worship. Okay, so this much we saw in the last class. I will recap, because today I saw again Ben is here. Many people who were absent last class are back. I can't just go ahead like that. So I had to. For others, it is repetition. For you, it is new. It's a new lesson. Still, you may go back and listen. Okay, now here the question comes. How do you say the scripture serves as a means of knowledge? I told you. The scripture does not directly tell you what you are. This is what you are. Doesn't tell that. If the scripture can tell you directly what you are, then one day the class will be over. You can go back knowing yourself. How we go to barber shop, get the haircut done, come back. No. It is a very subtle thing. The scripture first makes you understand what you are not. That's why it takes very long. Scripture, by making you understand what you are not, it helps you arrive at, stumble upon what you are. And for which to help you understand what you are not, thereby to understand what you are, it uses a prakriya, a methodology, a method of unfoldment. In Vedanta Shastra study, the basic method used is called a Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. Prakriya means method of unfoldment, analysis. Drik means seer. Drishyam means seen. Drik Drishya Vivekaha means, Vivekaha means discrimination. So discriminative or differentiation, the discrimination of the seer and the seen, discerning the seer from the seen, is the analysis of the seer seen discrimination, or can say the subject object analysis, the method of discriminating, distinguishing the seer and the seen. It's called Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. So there are many prakriyas, we'll see. And these prakriyas are all used here. The Shastram uses. The prakriyas, we don't have written book for prakriyas. It means the methodology, this is how you have to teach. This is a written book. The method of teaching you pick up when the teacher is unfolding the text, the scripture. And it is, the lesson is taught, as it is taught, the teaching is happening, you pick up that methodology. Oh, this is how it is taught. Is it clear? And I want to tell you one thing. I use the word Shastram as the Pramanam. See, Pramanam has come from the, you may not be interested, but I want to tell you. The Pramanam, the word, you know, has, there's a prefix pra and there's a noun manam. Manam is a gerund, you know, measuring. As a noun, measurement. Measuring, measurement. Manam. It has come from the root ma. The verb is mati. Mati means measures. Manam means measuring. Measurement. And pra is a prefix. So prakarshena miyate anena iti pramanam. That by which something is studied, understood, measured accurately is called pramanam, which is a valid means of knowledge. It's called pramanam. See, if I say my eyes are the pramanam, because through which accurately I measure the object called light. Measuring means what now? I arrive at, I understand, I know the object. See, there is light, no doubt. What is, how do I know? How do you understand? Through that. How much light is there? Bright light, dim light, all about, isn't it? Like that. So pramanam is a valid means of knowledge through which, by which I measure the object exactly how it is, what it is. Is it clear? So pramanam. And the one who operates the pramanam is the knower. The knower is called pramata. Pramata, knower. And object of knowledge, that which is to be known, that which is measured, is called prameyam. Pramata, knower. Pramanam, means of knowledge. Prameyam, object of knowledge. And once the knower, the pramata, operates the pramanam and understands the prameyam, understanding of the prameyam, object, or knowledge or cognition of the prameyam, which lies in the mind, is called pramitihi. Pramitihi. Four words. Is it clear now? Pramata, pramanam, prameyam, pramitihi. Pramata, knower. Pramanam, means of knowledge. Prameyam, object of knowledge. Pramitihi, knowledge of that object. Is it clear now? I want to know these words, Sanskrit terms. It's okay, no? You have to learn. Anyway, you'll get a note from him, so don't worry. If you keep on listening, you'll get these words. Not difficult. Knower, means of knowledge, object of knowledge, knowledge. And here, if the prameyam, the object of knowledge, is different, always different from the pramata, the knower. That's why we are using two different words. Prameyam is object of knowledge. That which is known, to be known. That which is known, which is to be known, is the object of knowledge, which is different. And the pramata, the knower, the subject of knowledge, is different from the known. This is generally, we all know this very well. We never mistake one for the other. Knower is the subject, known is the object. The knower, known, the subject-object difference is very clear for us. We never say object is the subject. We may never mistake the known object for the knower subject. In day-to-day, you know, transactions, we know knower is different from the known. Therefore, Shastram starts with this knower-known analysis, subject-object analysis, the method of differentiating the knower from the known. Dritrishya Viveka Prakriya. You can take the seer as the absolute seer. Otherwise, knower. the known as the seen or the known. So anything here, anything externally what I perceive, and as human beings we are all blessed with 5 different sense organs, and each sense organ serves as a means of knowledge of its corresponding object. We don't use ears to know the light. To have the knowledge of the object called light, we don't use ears. To have the knowledge object of to have the knowledge of the object called sound, we don't use eyes or nose. Each sense organ serves as valid means of knowledge of its corresponding object. Therefore, each sense organ is we have 5 different sense organs, 5 different means of knowledge. Therefore, the whole universe, the world of objects, the external world of objects, perceived through 5 different senses, in 5 different forms, as 5 different objects. The whole universe can be reduced to just world of 5 different objects. So what? However vast the universe is, there is no 6th object, understand? There is no 6th type of object of knowledge. If you say it is a world of objects, all the objects can be reduced to 5 different things known through, perceived through, understood through 5 different sense organs. There is no 6th object in the world. How much ever you know, what you know can be brought under the one of the 5 objects. Form, shape, color, seen through eyes, sound, any sound, heard through ears, any smell, any taste. So those external objects, and with reference to the universe, who is the knower? Who is the knower of this universe? Who is the one who is knowing all these different objects? Who is the one who knows the sound? Who is the one who knows the form? Who is the one who knows the taste and smell and all these objects? Shastram says, you are the knower. The world is known. The world of objects is known. All the objects in the world are known. And you are the knower. There is no knower in the world other than you. The world is known, you are the knower. So you as a knower, different from this external world of objects. When you say you are the knower, means everyone is addressed here. Every human being, every individual is addressed here. You are the knower. Because you should not have doubt. I am the knower. Is he not a knower? Every one of you is addressed here. You are the knower. The world is object of knowledge. Therefore, don't mistake anything in the world as you. You're very clear. I am the knower. The world is known to me. Every one of you can say that. I am the knower. The world is known to me, known by me. I, the knower, am different from the known external world. I know I am very well. Shastra says, you know you are. Do you have any doubt? Do you know you are? Do you know the world is? Do you know the world is? You say what? Yes, I know the world is. Do you know you are? Am I? Any doubt here? You, nobody asks. Of course I know I am. You know you know the world is. You know you are. But do you know what you are? Who you are? Yeah, I never asked this question. Your knowledge is half knowledge. You know you are, but you do not know what you are, who you are. Not only you do not know what you are, who you are, you do not know that you do not know what you are. Therefore, you do not know what this universe is also. Is this universe which I am perceiving real or not? I never asked this question. Why should I ask this question? I had no doubt. The universe is very real, very much real. Why should I raise this question at all? Is this universe real or not? What is this universe? Is this universe, is this world of objects, all the objects of experience and enjoyment, is this world real or not? I never raised this question. Why? If I had no doubt. I should have the doubt, then I would have raised this question. Why there is no doubt? I am very firm. This world is real. This world is known to me. This world is very much real. I'm already convinced. Therefore, the doubt does not rise at all for me. I should ask this question, never ask this. Never, it doesn't even rise in us. This question doesn't rise in us. We were never inclined to ask this question. Because it's so clear that the world is very much real for us. Our pains are real, our pleasures are real, our enjoyment is real. Our success is real, failure is real. Everything is real here for us. Therefore, we don't even raise this question. And we never knew that we can even ask this question, what I am, who I am. Why? Because all day we think we are 80 kilos, we are of this weight. Convinced. The question doesn't even rise. You know, this is where whatever we do not know, we cannot know by ourselves. With all that we have, something to understand what we cannot know by ourselves, you know, Shastram helps you understand. That is why we have reverence for Shastram. If Shastram also helps you to understand what you can understand by yourself, suppose Shastram comes and tells you, sun is bright. Do you need Shastram for that? You know yourself. Shastram need not come and tell you water is H2O. Already your scientists have discovered it for you. Sun does not rise and set. Shastra may not tell you all these facts. Why? The facts which you can discover, you can understand by yourself, exercising your intellectual capacity, by using your own thinking capacity, using your brain, we use the word, isn't it? By your own thinking, by your own exercise, if you can discover some facts, those facts need not be revealed by Shastram. If Shastram reveals the same facts what you can understand by yourself, you don't need Shastram. You won't reveal Shastram, isn't it? Our reverence for Shastram is because Shastram reveals what we cannot know, the facts which we cannot know by ourselves, by any means. Understand? Therefore, Shastram says, this itself we never knew. What is that first simplest fact? I know I am. I do not know what I am. I do not know that I do not know what I am is a fact. This itself. Okay? Therefore, how Shastram is going to help us understand what you are not, what I am not, the way how it's going to help us understand, arrive at what I am, that we'll see next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Today is Krishna Jayanti. Oh, I'm sure you all must be in a hurry to go back home. Can you do a small japam and go? 2 minutes? It's okay. If anybody is in a hurry, you can go. No problem. It's because Krishna's birthday today. Narayana 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 Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.